There are three daily habits that are destroying your memories, and you will lose 10% of your brain by the age of 55 and 20% of your brain by the age of 75. It'll actually shrink if you do not do something about this. There is a free workshop that you can partake in where you'll learn what these three habits are, how to fix it, and how to regain your memories. There's a link below in the description on how to sign up. Be sure to sign up. It's free information.
Right.
So what are you doing? Because you have this major issue. Okay.
I sure do. Because I've had I went for a whole year and basically subsisted on fish and rice. Very little other things. But my problem was at that time, I didn't recognize the interconnection with all of this. And so I was consuming whole milk kefir, which kept me in a disturbed state because I was also lactose intolerant to a great degree and didn't recognize it. In any event, what I'm doing within my strategy is to renew or refresh myself, right? And I'm taking a yogic approach. So what I'm doing basically is to eliminate everything that could be causing problems, get all of my symptomology settled down, and then moving forward from there. So I've discovered, for instance, that I can eat elk. I can eat elk meat, no problem. It's organic. They don't eat grain. I can eat fish, wild fish. Some of the farmed fish, the lectins come through. So I'm forced because of the circumstances now. I go to the local store, the local grocery store, and there might be 98,000 items there. And if I really looked, maybe there might be 200 I could actually eat.
God, and it's that's really a pain in the butt.
Oh, tell me about it.
And of course, that's a lot of effort.
It is. And see, the thing is, I've also got to watch out for my dogs, and I've got to watch out for my wife. Her health isn't good, so I do all the cooking and stuff. So it's quite egregious, sort of a slap in the face from universe that I must, develop a proper attitude about going forward here as I go shopping for the four of us here, because most of these things in most of these food emporiums, I cannot eat. And in fact, we moved here. I was doing well. And my the physician that who is really into nutrition that I've been dealing with, who got me onto the idea here last year, had said, well, when you get to this point, you can start introducing these things back in. Because she'd said, you can't eat any grain. And I said, well, but I love oatmeal. And she says, well, problem is there's lectins in oats, plus most of the oats are processed in areas where there's gluten. And so it can actually float over on it. Now, here's the thing. We moved here, and probably 14 or 15 days later, I started making bread again. I was a baker. I made pies. I made breads that would just, you'd just drool on the smell of the stuff, right? Was really good at sourdough. I could bake anything, any kind of anything. It didn't matter what. Of course, 99% of it all was all based on some kind of flour, wheat flour. So we move here, and I reintroduce bread into my system. Everything's fine. I thought, wow, she was correct. It actually worked. I thought I'd healed myself to the point where I wasn't going to have an issue. What it was, of course, I'd redialed back my sensitivity. And so it didn't take long, maybe 2 weeks. And all of a sudden, and it was quite all of a sudden, I woke up one morning, and I knew I was back to that level of illness again. And when you have that gluten intolerance, there's nothing you can do. Once the gluten is in your alimentary canal and you're starting to digest it, you have to live through all of the pain as it works its way through your system, and because it won't be digested. It will be basically encapsulated and removed. Now, the problem with the gluten, of course, is it's also related to the small intestine bacterial overgrowths and leaky gut. Because gluten causes, because it's such a big molecule, it causes these problems in your intestine, wherein things like candida, the yeast, mm-hmm. can turn into a fungus. And then they extrude hyphae, which are these like pseudopods, and they put them through your gut wall, and you end up with leaky gut. So leaky gut syndrome is related to gluten intolerance, which is also related to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, of which half of the population of the United States runs around with it, most of them not even knowing they've got it.
Can you tell if someone has it by looking at them?
No, you can. Well, okay. Most people that are obese and most people that have type 2 diabetes have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Some staggering number. By most, I mean over 90%, right? But it may be asymptomatic, may be untroubled. I don't have diabetes. I'm not obese. I have very active non-fatty alcoholic liver disease, and you can tell on me because I have these bags under my eyes, which are the result of gallbladder distress. Okay, so you get these from Chinese medicine, you get these from for two different ways, gallbladder distress or kidney problems. I don't have kidney problems. It's 100% related to
My dad has these big bags and no doctor ever tells him that, you know?
They're not trained. They don't know. Okay, so
just our doctors most of them are. They're just technicians, right? And I think a lot of them are. There's a decent percentage of the good ones that know that they didn't get the training they need, and they go out and figure it out on their own.
Like Mark Twain says, never let your schooling interfere with your education.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, I always said when I got out of school, I was like, it's like we have our head in the toilet. I mean, it's like these people, you know, you do need this, the education, however you get it, to learn some of those foundational mathematics and to understand how to think about problem solving, you know, mathematics.
Right. Critical analysis, et cetera.
Yeah. Yes. But beyond that, you got to go way beyond that to actually be functional and help whatever you're doing.
Well, there's another thing too. Most people are treating doctors as authorities.
Yes.
Okay, and a doctor at best is a professional consultant. And if I pay someone for advice,
exactly,
then I'm going to decide what part of that advice I think is sound, and I'm going to apply. I'm never going to do any of these things these people say. And I frequently here's the thing about non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So over the course of 20 plus years, I have easily consumed $500,000 in emergency room visits and other doctor visits attempting to diagnose what was wrong with me. Now, for the vast majority of my life, when I was this all came because I was vaxxed. Okay, I've suffered these symptoms since I was about 8.5 years old. The reason that it hit me was because I'd been living as a free-range kid in Alaska. We come back down to the lower 48. My dad gets assigned as occupation forces in Germany. There's concurrent travel non-concurrent travel, but they're going to let us go there. And so we're going to go to Germany several months after my father does. And I'd never had vaccines or any of this kind of stuff because living in Alaska before it became a state, you know, in the early 50s, there was just a lot of room for that kind of stuff to be ignored. And so I got everything all at once. And so both my brother and I suffered basically the rest of our lives from the problems of that initial huge vaccine overload within 3 weeks. I got all kinds of shots within 3 weeks and have been basically sick ever since. But the thing about the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is that you can be asymptomatic in the liver and the gallbladder, but still be presenting all kinds of symptoms in your digestive, in your ability to absorb, even think correctly, and all of these sorts of things. Now we know, for instance, that a lot of autism, ADHD, is all gut biome getting out of whack. And I'm of the opinion that a lot of schizophrenia is also gut biome getting out of whack and malabsorption leading to B12 crashes and all of these kind of things. And see, there's all of this stuff you can educate yourself on. You don't have to trust the doctors. You can go and read dozens of opinions in the same time that it might take that doctor to spew out his one opinion. And you can see all of these different studies that back up these other opinions, as opposed to the doctor who learned that bit in medical school, who knows how many years back, and it's not even current anymore, right? So doctors are professional consultants. They're not to be considered authorities. Well, this leaves us in a big bind, because who is going to be your authority? Well, for your body, it had better be your body. And so in my approach to things, what I'm doing is I'm taking a yogic approach. Now, the yogis, once you got to a certain level of hatha yoga, you would be become aware of these rejuvenation techniques, because many of the yogis would die in their 40s and 50s because of the environment in which they lived. And that's just not enough time to reach enlightenment. And so there were attempts made to extend life such that you could continue your meditations and work on reaching nirvana. And some of the rejuvenation techniques were quite successful, to the extent that potentates would even undertake them. Now, you'd have to do this under very serious conditions and so on, but the yogi rejuvenation techniques were really good, but quite horrific.
What were they? Give us some examples.
Well, I don't want to go into it because people probably try doing some of this, but I'll give you an overview. Basically, there were a few people at any given time in Indian society that practiced this kind of thing, and you'd run across them. You'd need a guru to do this. You can't do it on your own. And you'd basically be locked up in or provided a hut or a dark place to be in, and you'd be in there between 6 weeks and 4 months without ever going out. You would lose all your hair on your body, every bit of hair. You'd lose all your teeth. Most of your skin would slough off.
Why?
Because of the herbal herbal.
Okay. They give you some concoction.
No, you were taking many. It's a whole long procedure that had been perfected over the course of thousands of years in isolation from the general society, and it's quite horrific. And basically, you would regrow a body. The hardest part is the regrowing of the. Depending on how far they took you back, is the regrowing of the bone structure. So quite horrific, you know.
Oh my gosh! Can you regrow your teeth and your bones and everything?
If you were successful at this, but bear in mind, there's a little saying that goes along with it. You know that when you start this, there's this little prayer, and then you take the first of these decoctions. And when you take that decoction, the traditional way to do it is to say, here's to the 10,000 that died before me. Okay, the 10,000 people that were on that path that didn't succeed, that their death provided us with the knowledge to get me beyond their point, right? So there were a lot of people that didn't make it, and it's a not particularly good way to die, in my opinion, right? Slowly dissolving yourself. And then, of course, you do that over a course of a number of weeks, and then the guy comes on in and they start rebuilding you. And so, but you can't go out in light, you know,
you only make it as far as their science has gotten.
Correct. Okay. But they were pretty good. All right. And so there's some weird, anybody can look it up and go check it out. There's some weird rumors that, certain people still alive, have been through that process at least once. And, we even can go back to like Baba G, the sort of, you know, yogic version of Jesus kind of thing, who supposedly is 1800 years old now and wandering around, right? And people meet him all the time. And it's not hallucinations. It's not apparitions. It's not visions. They actually meet somebody they can shake hands with, pat him on the back, that sort of a deal.
Does he say he's that? Does he say he's 1800 years old?
He doesn't know how old he is.
And he talks about it, but he knows he's thousands or hundreds of years old.
Correct. And this is well known because of the people that knew him, 80 years ago who are now dying. And he's been there consistent alive for these 80 years and hasn't aged. So look up Baba G, you see all of these kind of things.
And he doesn't age, but does he keep going through that rejuvenation process, or does he do other things?
I don't know. Never asked him. So I don't know, right?
Have you met him?
No, I haven't. As far as I know, I've never met the man.
Greenflower, the world's largest video network for trusted cannabis knowledge, is now 100% free. They are taking all of their hundreds of videos and information and making it free to the public. Their mission is to educate as many people as possible about cannabis. You can treat specific ailments with cannabis. You can understand the science of cannabis. You can enter the cannabis industry. What's the best way to make money? Selling cannabis. Cook with cannabis, invest in cannabis, and much, much more. You can watch many of the world's leading cannabis experts, doctors, scientists, researchers, and entrepreneurs on Greenflower anytime you want when you sign up. The link will be available below. And remember, it's 100% free, so don't forget to sign up.
Okay. Now, the thing is that, you know, he's been ensconced in the Himalayan mountains. But there were rumors that he's gone walkabout, that Baba G now is out walking among humanity, and probably just to see what the fuck, you know, hey, what's going on, guys? You've been in a cave for 1800 years. What's happening? You know, what are these games? You know, show me some, you know, some video games or something. I don't know what his point is, but the rumors are that he has indeed left his Himalayan area and has gone truck about and stuff, but we're very much diverted. Okay. But basically
but
we have
interesting.
To take that kind of, yeah, we have to take that same kind of an approach with our, you know, die young in a very advanced age. I'm not going to go through that rejuvenation kind of approach that the Hindus do, but I have to do some level of it with an understanding of what I'm attempting to proceed or what my goal is and the methods that I'm going to proceed to use to achieve that goal. And that includes basically backing off everything that could be injurious to me. And this is where you develop discipline. This is where you develop self-discipline and, you know, the ethics really provide you with that energy to continue that, to not eat that M&M, that candy bar, whatever it is, right? To not have that piece of bread and so on. And so it also means that we need to examine at an individual level how we're going to do things, especially during this transition period that's going to be 40 or 50 years long as our old food system crumbles and the new one develops. And we're seeing the new one develop right now. It had been forecast in my ALTA reports even back as like as far as 1999 when we were getting reports in or getting data in there about indoor growing and multi-story vertical farms indoors and all this kind of stuff. And so we're going to find ourselves in this world. Now we have to figure out how to a way to navigate through it that is harmonious for ourselves within that world and also beneficial to us as we go forward. And it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, because we're still just trying to figure it out. We're right. And what you need when you're 100 years old may change, right? We've never.
Oh, yeah.
We don't even know.
Right now, if you're 100 years old, you need nursing care. You know,
yeah, exactly.
We don't. I want to live in a future where at 160, I don't need that.
Yeah, I don't. No, I don't want to be that. That's not my idea of living older.
Correct, and that's why I want to live young, to an advanced old age.
Okay, well, now let me ask you. There are a lot of people that say that we're overpopulated. Now, do you think they're ignorant, or do you think they're purposely doing this for an agenda?
There is an agenda that pushes that out there, and most of the people that are reflecting that are just doing so non-critically. They're just not thinking about it. They're taking the arguments presented to them as face value and propagating that forward. That's how we end up with social justice mobs and, you know, academia run amok trying to alter our social order. And, you know, I love science books. Textbooks and so on. And those really are the only thing I read. And there was this new book that came out. It was, it's downstairs, but it's, Antarctic Marine, Geology. And I thought, oh, you know, that's gotta be a good dense little book to read, right? Nice beach reading for the summer. And so I get this book and I was disgusted because the whole first chapter was, tirade, a social justice tirade. No facts, no science, just opinion and agenda about global warming. Then I started getting into chapter 2, 3, and 4, and the guy actually has some real facts, but those facts are always within paragraphs in which there is opinion being expressed. What I wanted was the old style, you know, Bureau of Ships Manual for Electricity from the Navy. Right. No politics in that. Electricity does this. This is how you connect. If you're running your submarine with this diesel battery, you do this. You know, that's what I was after, was something that was factual, a science book, not a propaganda piece. So now I know academia within our social order here in the United States is totally corrupt. This is a peer-reviewed textbook now. And it's like, oh, my God, any kid that reads this without an understanding is going to think that all of the dire predictions this guy's making about Antarctica are actually going to happen. And so again, off on a rant to the side, but that's our problem, is that we need to think accurately and have a framework for that thinking as we go forward, especially now that we're going to be living a long time. And one needs to recognize on a personal moral basis that the Living a long time brings the ability to live longer so your mistakes can catch up with you.
Yes.
Right?
Well, and mistakes how you feed your body, but all around. Now, what do we do as far as tyrants being able to live a lot longer, but poor people not being able to because they don't have the resources?
That's going to be self-eliminating in terms of, you know, such a condition as that will force revolution. There won't be any issue. It won't last very long. Tyrants may be able to come on in and say, well, I'm going to live to be, you know, 180. Well, there, that's fine. You're going to have a revolution in 12 years. You know, that's how long it's going to take. One generation reaching the active stage of puberty, and they're going to end this lack of fairness in this particular planet, especially if that population has any access to the rest of humanity. So, you know, social media is doing away with that. Actually, I think social media is, or the computer and the interconnection from the internet is going to totally do away with the importance of the sovereign state and the political structures over these next couple of years. And that's why we're in this period of time where we've got all of this chaos and the deep state is being exposed. If we look at it now, we're in a very major period of change. Probably relates to, you know, planetary alignments and all of this kind of thing. But this period of change is going to basically destroy our concept of government over these past, that we've developed over these past 1600 years. Because so much of it can be replaced by anonymous interaction with stuff on the internet, to making it so efficient. So think about a situation. What keeps a tyrant in power is the fear of the people that they're going to be shot or destroyed when they attempt to beat him up. But over time, you'll notice that we have fewer and fewer on-the-ground social enforcers of the political will, right? So there's fewer police on the street at the moment. They're more isolated. They're doing less. They're not walking around being peace officers for the general political will. And as the population grows, that percentage will never, ever be able to catch up to the way it used to be. And so there will be fewer people wielding guns to try and shoot those that would take out the tyrants. And then also now the tyrants are going to be that much more vulnerable to the smart guy with the computer stuff.
Which is what's happening now. It's all like the InfoWars term really is true.
Yeah. And it's devastating. It's the ideas that is the real power, not guns and force anymore, right? And so they used to kill people in a couple of thousand years back for coming into their area with a new idea. You know, can't have that. Can't have it spread. Better kill that and kill that man right now, you know, because that idea is too radical.
They can't put the box. They can't put it back in the box. It's already out.
No, right.
They can't contain it.
Right. And so you've got a social structure where you've got tyrants and stuff. And then the people that live under that tyrant, say they were on an island, somehow they get a cell phone and they start looking at the internet and they find out about, oh, well, this guy has taken C60 and the C60 is readily available in all of these countries, but they can't get it. Well, you know, how many years is it going to be before they decide, hey, I'm going to die anyway? You know, I mean, I personally would be that way if I was faced with a tyrant who was 120 years old and even at my age now, 64, I would say, I'm going to die at age 72 anyway. So I'll spend these next 7 or 8 years here crafting a way to take that bastard out with me.
I agree with you. People are like, whatever, let's go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think will be the result with C60? Do you think it'll be like a vitamin? I mean, do you think everybody will just see it like a vitamin, like something we have to have?
I think so. Okay, we define vitamins as being the minimum necessary elements for life. That's the definition of vitamin, right? And we don't know what all those minimum necessary things are for life. So for instance, in the late 1800s in through the early 1900s, we had a whole series of diseases. Terrible diseases that twist your bones all up and you'd be in agony and cause all kinds of problems. And we put them under various different labels, but ultimately came to call them all rickets. And it turns out it was a vitamin D deficiency because we didn't know about vitamin D. We thought it was a disease. Okay, so how many of the disease conditions that are autoimmune system right now are in fact the other side of that, which is too much gluten is causing this autoimmune response, right? How much of our diseases are in fact something we're participating in by either not getting something that we need or getting too much of something we don't need. And so, I've really examined it. I've looked at Hindu practices and Japanese practices in terms of diet. I've looked in all of the blue zones as they're defined by the World Health Organization. These are people, or blue zones are areas where the population has an extremely high percentage of 100-year-old individuals that are healthy and so on. And so I'm looking at all of their diets, and some things that you see is that it's primarily vegetarian, but very low grains. Some have no grains at all, especially the high mountain people. They live on root crops and some small supplementation of organic meat that's not grain fed. And so we may end up being in that kind of a situation. That was one of the prompts to me moving where we're located, okay, is that I'm located in a recreational area. And in this recreational area, I can find elk, I can find wild turkey, and lots of seafood that is not farmed, won't be gluten-tainted, and that I can harvest myself. So I can go sort of subsistence living in that sense, right? Because when I go to the local food emporium, I find 98,000 things of which I can only eat 200. And you know, their 200 offerings are even then a little dodgy sometimes. And so I really need to look at it. And for this transition period, I figure I'll be doing a lot of fishing and some level of hunting to supplement and to stock the larder here. To that effect, okay, so rolling it on back to the far view, I have this far view, and my far view says, well, you know, basically talking to myself, I say, you're an annoying bastard, and I know your traits, and you're going to get bored. You know, after you can't spend the next year fishing and not do anything, right? You're going to get really bored with fishing. You'll get damn good at it, but you're going to get bored. So I'm going to have to do something, but I've been doing code since 1979. And so talk about bored and tired of it, right? So I'm just not doing that anymore. But it also means that for the far look approach to this, I also have to cultivate and feed my head, mm-hmm. right? I can't just worry about feeding the body and just go stressless and, you know, sit on the beach
all
the time.
Doesn't work. Yeah.
No, it's not going to work. So I don't know what it is I'm going to do, but as part of my renewal process over this next year, I'm going to figure out that what would, and so this is one of the things that I came up with, was that in looking at the idea that I might live to be 160, well, geez, okay, so I could have 3 40-year careers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it could be radically different, so I wouldn't be bored. And I'd get to be a novice, a noob in a new environment, like every 40 years, and that'd be stimulating, keep my brain going. And if true, I would have mastery. I'd know how to master things relatively fast, but nonetheless, there'd be a whole lot of stuff that I would have to learn. And so the feed your head part of it becomes really a key element as well.
Yeah. Being a newbie in something is actually exhilarating, isn't it?
Oh, it's so cool. It's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like being a little kid again.
Yep. Give yourself the freedom to make mistakes and not be critical about it, right?
Yeah.
Knowing you're going, oh, I'm going to screw up. I'm new at this. I can't do this.
Bad.
I've never done that before. Right.
Well, and that's what makes people afraid to do things, is because they're going to be bad, right? You will be bad. And so you just have to accept, I'm going to be terrible, but that's okay.
right. Because, and see, here's the thing. I may be terrible at the activity, but what I'm good at is the learning.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, so that works out quite well. So getting into the whole view thing, far view thing. So I'm going to be retired for a while, and then I'll be unretired as I figure out what new career I want to do. And there are some things that are quite intriguing. Okay. So I've had an offer to work with some guys who are going to attempt to recreate the 1890s airships. They think they've gotten some information from somewhere, and I won't go into any of the details, that gives them an edge on creating these non-spaceship anti-gravity vehicles. And quite fascinating. And so it's like, well, I may do that. There are other things that have been offered me, but I know that I'll still be doing things that are technical, but I just won't be writing code anymore. And, you know, you get bored just sitting on it, you know, and typing all the time anyway. So in the process of getting my head screwed on right, so to speak, for this far view, I'm giving myself the freedom to take a year off, to get my body straight with the issues that this is the social order.
Are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, keep going. I lost you there for a second.
Well, I won't put it down to interference from the deep state. You know, I don't have a persecution that complex.
I don't think that one was because it wasn't all that. You weren't giving right. me some juicy tidbit on something.
right. But anyway, so where was I now?
You were talking about how you were planning for 160 years out and how.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a year off or less than a year. I'm not, you know, I have no constraints. I'm just going to give myself the freedom or maybe take 2 or 3 years off. I just don't know. But I'm going to have things to learn. I'm going to have to examine them. And at the same time, I'm going to try and get myself fit and so on. And so the question arises as to, you know, during this period of time, what sort of activities am I doing? Well, some things I'm doing is that I'm going back to re-educate myself. And that's why all of the interest in the new crop of textbooks. And I'm starting again, as I did in the past, 50 years ago with oceanography, which is why I'm you know, because I'm living where I'm at. And then I'm going to do things with boats, which I enjoy, and in the fishing and so on. So for instance, I splurged and bought a Hobie Tandem Island trimaran, this little 16-foot boat that I can take and sail around and explore the coasts and do some fishing with. And I'm going to be a noob at using it, but it's a, you know, it's an entirely new process of dealing with boats and this sort of thing. And as I say, over the course of this next year, it's going to be like really intense in terms of education, because there's so much in the way of new math, especially in oceanography and the physical sciences, that didn't exist at the time that I was studying it, you know, 50 years ago. And there's so many, I mean, the problem with it is that you get to a point of where you know certain things. And by that, I mean, you become a master at certain things. And the ability to be a master at anything allows you to examine any other aspect of life from the perspective of a master's eyes. So even though I'm a noob in some of this stuff, or I'm reinvestigating it, I can look at it and certain things will jump on out. And I can say, boy, here's a real practical use for that little bit of information based on 40 years of experience doing this, right? And so that's where it's going to be. That's where there's always these diversions and, oh, well, I could go and do that. I've got to work my way through that for a while. I've got to work my way through this workaholic syndrome, because I don't need new work. I don't need to be starting new businesses. But every time I get in there and start looking at some of this new information, it's like, boy, that sure is intriguing. Think of what a guy could do with this information, right?
Well, that's the hard unwinding from being a workaholic is very difficult.
Yeah. You know, well, there's another aspect of it too. Okay. Many people don't recognize this. So, even scientists now, even people that are trained in the science of the mind, psychologists and psychiatrists, will acknowledge that people can be diagnosed in terms of mental conditions by the language that they use in a habitual fashion. Okay. So now there have been recent articles that some linguists are saying we can pick out and tell if somebody's depressed, and we can do it within 500 words of hearing them talk 500 words in their daily discourse. And the psychiatrists are all freaked out. They've got all these diagnostic tools and so on, but the linguists come on in and they say, no, it's, you know, this is the way it is. And so they did a study, and out of the, I want to say there were 500 case studies that were done. And so they gave these linguists a number of different cases, hundreds of them. They ran their software through the stuff and analyzed it, and they were 100% correct. Every single person that had been diagnosed in this study by a psychiatrist as being depressed was also picked up as being depressed by the software written by these linguists. So I knew I was on the right track. Okay, so because that's the case, the future is also... okay, so if you're depressed, you're thinking about the past. If you're anxious, you're thinking about the future. So way back when I started my work, I fell into this guy, Pulchek, this Polish-American scientist who came up with Pulchek's emotional wheel, in which he categorized human emotions. Now, I had to add some stuff there that he didn't even think of. But some of the things I discovered was you could draw a line right down through that wheel, and half of the words related to depression and half of the words related to anxiety. And so all of those that are depression are looking into the past. All those that are anxiety are looking into the future. But curiously or not curiously, it makes sense. All of the associations of fear are all future oriented. You can't be afraid of the past, right? It's already happened. You don't ever express fear words relative to the past, only to the future. And so I was able to add all of this stuff. And one of the things that I discovered over time was that we are not necessarily as in control of our thoughts as we might want to imagine. And thus, anxiety, I discovered, is directly related to liver and gallbladder. Okay, the Hindus say that the seat of consciousness is the pancreas. And that's where all the hormones flow from. It's the hormonal control. And all of your thoughts are hormonally driven. Well, it turns out that anxiety about the future, fear about the future, all of these kind of things are related to the function of the liver and the gallbladder. And that you can actually get yourself to a state where you will have very bad thoughts about the future and not able to control your thinking. And it's a sure sign of active at that moment liver non-function, liver discomfort, something not working in the liver. So it's not as though, so those individuals that are, you know, labeled as hypochondriacs, labeled as, you know, Barney Fife, nervous kind of guys, you know, this sort of thing, are seemingly always on the edge of running out of control and this sort of thing, they may be expressing the fact that they're within that 50% of the population with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And one of the symptoms that you never tumble to is that your thoughts are being controlled by it.
Well, you know, they did a study on mice with just the gut, and there was really aggressive mice. I think they were in Australia or something, and then these other really timid ones. And they switched the gut bacteria from the aggressive ones and the timid ones and switched them around. And the aggressive ones became more timid or became timid, and the timid ones became aggressive. Right. So they know that. Yeah. So I think it's all.
Well, 80% of our serotonin that reaches our brain comes in through the vagus nerve and is generated by our gut bacteria. And if you had said this 20 years ago, even as long ago as 15 years ago to doctors, and even today, perhaps the majority of gastroenterologists would not even understand this. And certainly very few of the psychiatrists ever recognize that. And so they give you stuff that further trashes your gut bacteria rather than attempting to get that to be harmonious. And that's where we end up with these serotonin imbalances and all these other problems. And of course, the antidepressant drugs, what do those do? They're very harsh on your gut bacteria. Now, this is not something that most people are necessarily capable of adjusting on their own, because there's, you know, 90,000 different species of gut bacteria. You got to sort of have an idea of what you're doing. You got to be educated about it. You've got to look at some of these things and see what's potentially available to you, right?
It's complicated. But
it is. It is. And it's a pain in the ass, because we want to go out. We want to go sailing. We want to go surfing. We don't want to be worrying about, you know, what's the bifidolongiforium bacteria doing today, right?
It's a pain in the ass. I know.
Yeah.
Well, there's some ideas that your gut bacteria actually is a key to longevity beyond just, you know, for food and stuff, but really managing your gut bacteria is, you know, there's this whole field of study on that, and people are actually taking some things. There's some stuff, there's a process that people are taking, thinking they'll live to 125 years old by just managing that.
And I have no doubt that it would be successful if they were able to be successful at it, right? So in other words, if the protocols were actually accurate, mm-hmm. they should be able to go to 125 with no problem at all. Because, you know, if we look at those people in the blue zones, most of the people in the blue zones don't have access to allopathic medicine. So most of the people that live in these areas where there's at least one third of the population are centenarians, most of those individuals don't have access to allopathic medicine. So they, you know, and like the Germans have a saying, you know, doctors kill their mistake. They bury their mistakes. And so, you know, and that's the truth. And so apparently at least a major component to living into being a very healthy 100-year-old person that can walk up and down these valleys in the Hunza region and do this on a daily basis is never seeing and never letting a doctor, you know, influence you. So maybe we have a situation of too much oxygen, well, or not enough. In this case, we've got too many doctors, right? Maybe maybe that's our problem.
Maybe. You know? Or the good ones get killed off, which is, that's a dark topic. But would you stick around and answer a question for my patrons?
Sure. Yeah, okay. No problem.
This has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us. And you're going to be still, even in your retirement, I have to have you back.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll still be out here doing stuff. And I'm going to, as I say, I've just given it up with the code. I'm tired of all of the trolls, you know. And of course, part of the problem is there's no real easy way to retire from my line of work, in the sense that I've got all these people that feel that they are dependent on getting this information. And so they're going to feel the lack of it. And it just was, there was just no clean, nice, easy way to do this. And then universe prompted me with this 2-month battle with gluten intolerance rearing its head again. And it's finally like, no, I've got serious issues here, guys. I don't want to be mucking about with this sort of thing. Plus then there was the, you know, the problems and the damage with our moving process and the burglary and all of this other stuff going on. So I really got to the point where I need to redo things. And as I say, I was aiming for a renewal anyway.
It's exciting, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah. It's going to be cool.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure.